Okay, so let's start our final session, you know. Okay, so anyway, we have been discussing about many things in these 3 days, you know. So I gave you just a like a very rough sketch or rough perspective of Dharma, you know. Like I just gave you also just a little bit historical aspect of Buddhism, you know, like now what kind of tradition in general exists right now all over Asia, you know, like that. And so some asked about Zen Buddhism itself, you know, and historically. Maybe the word Zen, Z-E-N, is already very popular or famous, you know. Then many people, maybe some maybe confused, you know, because Zen and Buddhism or Buddha or Dharma, then what kind of relationship, you know. But Zen, what is Zen? It's actually from Dhyana, you know, jhana, you know, it's a concentration state, concentration of our mind when we meditate, you know. Like we enter into Dhyana, jhana, you know, when we meditate. Because it's already Indian concept, you know, not only Buddhism, like Hindu people, yoga people, they talk about these kind of things, you know. So Zen Buddhism is just a dhyana or jhana, you know. So, but when Buddhism came to China, because China and India are so far away, so that's why Chinese people couldn't understand what is really going on in India, and many sutras just arriving at random, you know. So that's why so much confusion, and nobody knows what, you know, like that, you know. So then some people like respect one sutra, some people think another sutra is best or like that, you know. And people are just only thinking, you know. But then eventually. Like a Bodhidharma came to China from South India. I don't know which area of South India, you know. But then he brought like enlightenment itself. I mean, he brought experience itself, you know, not explanation or not like you know, interpretation or not like that, but the enlightenment itself, you know. Then finally real Dharma arrived at China. But at least Zen Buddhist people think like that, you know. And then it was, I'm not sure, 5th century or something like that, you know, 5th or 6th century, you know. Then in Japan also 13th century, as you know, like in Japan we are learning everything from China, because East Asia, China is so strong, you know. So that's why China and the country around China, like Korea or Japan and maybe Vietnam, you know, we are just importing Chinese culture, you know. Then we develop our own culture, you know. So like that then our ancestor went to China and they brought back Dharma to Japan. And then 13th century, you know, 2 Japanese monks went to China and then they brought back Zen Buddhism to Japan, you know. So then now, Zen Buddhism is one of the most strongest sects in Japan, you know, like that. So, but this is just a historical aspect, you know. But some people think, you know, Zen Buddhism is different from Buddhism because word Zen is already is used like independently from Buddhism or like that, you know, like that. But from authentic Zen Buddhist teacher's point of view, Zen Buddhism is nothing but authentic Buddhism, you know, because we are directly connected to the Dharma, to the Buddha itself, you know, the Buddha himself, you know. And from my experience of Japanese Zen Buddhism, and there is, and also Myanmar Theravada Buddhism, which many people think is very close to early stage of Buddhism, you know. And from my experience, they are very similar, Zen and the early stage of Buddhism. Why? In what sense? You know, they emphasize experience itself, experience itself. They avoid like a complicated discussion, extremely complicated discussion, you know. And also they emphasize on, like that they focus on like a daily life. And they focus on daily life means our existence itself. It means ourselves itself, you know. So what does it mean? It means Buddhism is talking about you, you know, about me, you know. So other than this me, this you, Dharma doesn't exist, you know. It's not like many religions are not like that. Usually there are some kind of Buddhist belief system, you know, like a form of like a thinking. It's like an ideology, you know. So, like, if you become follower of such and such a tradition, then you have to accept this set of belief systems, belief, you know. And according to this sect, we think like that. But according to another sect, they think like that. But now you become follower of this sect, you should think like that, you know. So then, of course, from this kind of idea, always we cannot avoid the conflict between many sects, many traditions, you know. Of course, we cannot avoid, you know. But according to the Buddha and according to Zen Buddhism, this is ridiculous, you know. Why? Because belief system is just accumulation of our our thinking mind, you know. You know. And ideology is just a, you know, collection of our whole form of our thoughts. It means the form of thinking, you know. So that's why this is just a, it's just a collection of knowledge or collection of such and such things, you know. Then you accept this collection of thinking or not, then you can become a follower of such and such sect, you know, like that. We don't accept this kind of idea itself as a Zen Buddhist or just an early Buddhist, like a disciple, student of the Buddha. Why? Because Buddha himself was against this kind of things. Buddha himself, you know, because you are Indian, so you know that in India there's so many kind of sects and traditions like that, you know. And people think that one sect thinks like that, one thinks like that, wow, you know. And even 2,500 years ago, it was like that. Okay? Then Buddha appeared. Buddha appeared. Then what happens? You know? Like, Buddha was, you know, Buddha is very gentle or very compassionate, you know, but at the same time, Buddha is a fighter, you know. Buddha is a fighter, you know. And Buddha is completely criticizing and cutting like that, you know. Extreme. He has a very sharp knife, you know, and just cutting, you know. And what was he cutting? What was he criticizing? You know, he was criticizing just a form of thinking. You think God is like that, you know, what this world is eternal or what is not eternal, wow, you know, there are a bunch of this kind of ideology, you know, but, or like Atman exists, or Atman doesn't exist, like that, you know, and, but what is Atman or Brahman or like that, you know, because Brahman or Atman, all are just a concept. Because you don't have any experience of Brahman or Atman, you know? Then it's just a really, really empty discussion about something which you don't know, you know, which you don't know. So then nobody can judge which is right, what is right, what is wrong, you know? So that's why Buddha's approach is totally different. It's okay. We don't know about the Brahman, we don't know about the Atman, but at least we know our suffering, we know our misery, we know our, you know, unhappiness, we know our pain. Why don't we start from this reality itself, you know? Then, let's check the cause of this pain. Then, let's look for real medicine, you know, and then this medicine works or not, then we can judge, or something like that, you know. So Buddha's approach is completely practical. Practical means Buddha doesn't demand any kind of blind faith. No, if you want to become a student, you have to believe this. No. He doesn't do that. And you read, I think already you read many Buddhist sutras, you know? And never he says so. Because he is always saying, you really have to check by yourself everything. And you can check it, you know? Then how to check? Doctor is telling you how to check your body, you know? Check your temperature or like that, you know? So then everything is just down to earth and practical, you know. Yeah, because, you know, sometimes I attend some kind of inter-religious dialogue, you know, It's very, I shouldn't say funny, you know, but it's very funny. Because, like, when I attend this kind of conference, you know, usually many famous teachers, you know, and of course they are very eloquent, you know, about like that. And they are eloquently speaking about some kind of paradise, you know. Paradise, you know. And so, yeah, very fascinating or like that, you know. But then how can we go there, you know? How can we go there? No, nothing, you know. Nothing about how can we go there, you know, about how we can go there, you know. So, like that. But then people ask me to speak something, you know. Then, like, I'm talking about our crazy monkey mind, you know, crazy wild horse mind, you know, and our misery, our unhappiness, you know, how to, and what is the fundamental cause and how to overcome, or like that, you know. Then I just give some short speech about this, you know, about. Then people, after that, people came and they told me, oh, your speech is very practical, you know, like that. No, yes, maybe practical, you know, because we are always starting from us, from our misery, from our unhappiness, like that. And because, why? Because our misery, our happiness are real, true pain. But talking about this kind of paradise, maybe this paradise might exist or more, or might not exist. We don't know, you know. So that's why, talking about paradise is not exactly practical, you know. And why? Because we don't know how to go there, you know. So that's why, our speeches, my speech is always practical, you know. Then I with people, I pay visits to one very famous, I don't know if you know it, you know, maybe some Hindu teacher, you know. But this teacher himself is very enlightened, you know, like that, you know. But anyway, then people ask me to ask some question to him, you know. So then I asked him. This is already ashram situation, you know. And many followers, many people are practicing with this teacher, you know. Then I asked him, you know. Yes, but now in Hindu tradition or Buddhist tradition, there are many meditation methods or practice methods, you know. It's good. But for today's people, especially today's people, we are different from ancient, very naive, in good sense, you know, very, you know, their life is very close to nature, you know. That's why they don't have a lot of defilements in their mind, you know. But we have lots of defilements, you know. We are exposed to too much stimulation, you know. That's why our thinking is like that, non-stop, you know, like that. So such a people with such a non-stop thinking mind and non-stop negative mind, you know, do you think still ancient method work? Or do we need something arrangement for we crazy people like that, you know? Then he mentioned, he answered some questions. He answered, you know, about, you know, like that. But his answer is, it's okay, you know. But then, after that, again people came to me, you know, they said, oh, you ask a very good question, you know, like that, you know. Because I know many people are practicing with this enlightened teacher. He's enlightened, I'm sure, you know, but we ate a meal together, but I know exactly about these people, you know, these people, and many Western also followers, you know. Then I know they cannot practice like as his teacher, you know. Why? It's not because he doesn't give any right instruction like that, you know. Yes, definitely he is giving right instruction. But these people, their mind is totally like this, you know, cannot stop thinking, you know. So I know, if we don't focus on this, our crazy monkey mind, it's very difficult to practice such an ancient meditation technique, meditation method. That's why first, we really have to focus on this, our crazy mind, you know. And it seems like nobody asks about this, our crazy mind, you know. So That's why I understand everywhere the same. You know, teacher is talking about the paradise, hidden paradise, you know, like a Nibbana or, you know, anything like that, you know. And they are offering some kind of method, you know. But this kind of method usually not precisely applicable to today's people. Why? Because we have too much thinking mind, too much negative emotion like that. So that's why unless we really overcome our thinking mind or negative emotion, it's very difficult to practice it. Everywhere like that, Buddhist meditation center and yoga center and Hindu meditation center, you know, as far as I know, you know. So that's why now I'm telling people about how to deal with this crazy mind. Okay? So in this sense, early Buddhism and Zen Buddhism, we have a very similar approach. Similar approach means just focus on ourselves, our misery, our pain, or like that. You know, this is our starting point, you know? And we look for the fundamental cause of this pain, and we look for medicine, but we don't have any blind faith in medicine. We just take this medicine. Then, how to judge right medicine or wrong medicine? It's very easy. You know, if we take this medicine, and if this medicine works for my stomach ache, then this is right medicine. That's it. So simple. Then, even if this medicine is very famous, you know, this medicine is manufactured by a very famous pharmacy company, you know, and this medicine was given by a doctor who graduated from best medical school, you know, well, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all, you know. But if this medicine can really get rid of my stomach ache, then this is medicine is good for me, right for me, like that. Okay. We don't need any blind faith. We need only just honesty, you know? Like that, okay? So, if you, because now you are practicing or you are studying like a religion, spirituality, or now Dharma, Buddhism, you know? Then, like, please understand, you know, your starting point is always you, nothing else. Nothing else. You don't have to become so-called Buddhist, you know. You don't have to become a member of such and such organization, you know. But you can always start from you, your misery, your unhappiness, you know, like that. Then look for real medicine. And you don't have to have any blind faith in this medicine, you know, just check it, just do it, just take it, you know. Then you yourself know which medicine is good for me, right for me, or like that. Then little by little, you can become healthier and healthier. You know, it's so simple, you know. So that's why early Buddhism and Zen Buddhism, we are completely against any kind of ideology or any kind of blind faith or any kind of dependency, you know? Dependency. We don't depend on teacher. We need a teacher, of course, definitely, you know? And the teacher will give you precise diagnosis and give you a medicine, you know? Then you just take it. Then you are saved. Heal yourself. You know, you can really heal yourself. So we should not be dependent on teacher. Like that, you know. So then we can avoid any kind of, you know, wishy-washy like things which is going on in spiritual world or religious world or even Dharma world. You know, like that. It's so simple. You know. So in this sense, Japanese Zen Buddhist and early Buddhism exactly have the same attitude, you know. But this morning we discussed already the difference between these two traditions, you know. And I said we need both. They are complementary, you know. They support each other. Without one, without this, this doesn't work. Without this, this doesn't work. That's kind of relationship from my experience, you know, because as I said, Zen Buddhism, we already lost, I don't know, it was transmitted to China or I don't know. Anyway, I know today's Japanese Zen temple, and I know what is really going on in today's Japanese Zen monastery, you know? And because we don't have any instruction about how to deal with our mind, you know, then we are just sitting on a cushion, you know. But without we can without being able to concentrate, you know. But because anyway, as I said, Japanese Zen Buddhism is very, 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 you know, hard practice. You know, that's why we are used to. Japanese Zen monk, they can sit on the cushion for many hours, you know, without moving, in very cold environment or hot environment, you know, like that. But their mind is, they cannot really calm down their mind because they don't have any techniques of calming down their mind. No? But then, when I went to Myanmar, you know, as I said in this morning, you know, again, another different kind of problem is there, you know, because there are so many detailed instructions about how to observe our body, how to observe our in-breath, out-breath, but most essential instruction was lacking, according to me, you know, according to me, because maybe they don't think this is an essential instruction, but from my observation, actually many people are suffering, many meditators are actually suffering, you know, because they think they are precisely following instruction, but still no result. Why? Why? Then they answer like this, because I have not yet practiced long enough, you know, Maybe I have been practicing only 1 year or 2 years, you know. So that's why if I practice 10 years or 20 years, maybe I will get result. Maybe yes and no, you know. Maybe yes, you know. Maybe this person has not yet practiced enough, you know. But most probably no, you know, because most probably no, because most probably he is doing something wrong. That's why he cannot get the result. You know, this is my observation. You know, because I was in the middle of meditation center, you know. And I know what they are doing. They are really watching Bob's, try to observe body sensation, like that, or try to see, try to observe in-breath, out-breath, like that. They are too much force, you know, like that. Then people cannot concentrate on in-breath, out-breath, you know. Then people become so tense, you know, some people become sick or like that, you know. And then some people say, because I have practiced only 1 year, so maybe I need 10 years, 20 years, like that, you know. And some people actually, after half a year, trying so hard, you know, But if you try hard, like, this kind of hardness, you know, then of course usually half year is a limit. Half year is a limit. And usually, after half year, they collapse. They collapse. And they, what do they say? I'm not for meditation. You know, I'm not for meditation. I don't have enough parami. You know, parami. You know, I don't have enough benefit. You know, because of karmic reason. You know, like that. You know, maybe yes and no, and most probably no. You know, most probably no. It's not a matter of parami or like that. You know, or your character or like that. No. Again, you are sorry, I'm sorry to say you are doing something wrong, fundamentally wrong, you know? So this is my observation. That's why I'm saying, you know, the most essential instruction, the most essential point of instruction was lacking. That's why people just couldn't observe their body sensation, couldn't observe their body in-breath, out-breath. Okay, so then now I completely use both traditions, you know, and to support each other. So that's why, as I said this morning, you are practicing exactly same as a same meditation as a like a Myanmar Theravada tradition, observing body sensation, compassion, and observing in-breath, out-breath, like that, you know. But with completely Zen Buddhist point of view, Zen Buddhist, Zen Mahayana, Zen Buddhist perspective. What it does, it's this old identity and new identity itself, like that, you know. And as a new identity, we practice it. Okay. So, but why? Okay. Then this is now you understand like about basic attitude of early Buddhist people and Zen Buddhist people, you know. And apart from dogma, you know, dogmatism, you know, like that. And now you know the relationship between Theravada meditation and Zen meditation. And now you can see, like in our meditation method, already two traditions are mixed. But not just mixing, you know, supporting each other, you know. Techniques are Theravada, but the perspectives are complete Mahayana, you know, like that. Then, okay, now we really have to discuss about a very important subject, you know. Maybe we cannot finish, maybe we can continue later, you know, later, I don't know. Like until now, I have been talking about as if like there are two rooms, you know, old room and new room. Sometimes I say old dimension, new dimension, you know, or old identity, new identity. As if there are two things, you know. But are they really two separate things? Of course not, you know, of course not. But because to clarify things, intentionally I'm saying as if like there are two things, you know. Okay? Then, yesterday we discussed about body in body, mind in emotion in emotion, mind in mind. This is the essential point of vipassana. You know. Then what does it mean? It means we are entering into body, we are entering into emotion and mind. So what does it mean? It means like we are not watching the body from outside. We are not watching our emotion or mind from outside. In dualistic world. Usually we are living in a dualistic world. Like our language is showing. Always language, any language. All the language have at least same structure. Always a subject, verb, and object. And of course order is slightly different, you know. In Hindi or in Japanese, first subject and object and verb, right? You know, English subject, verb and object. You know, of course order is different, but still structure is the same. You know, then as if this subject is doing something to this object, you know, so it means always subject and object are separated. Very dualistic idea, you know. Then we are usually living in such dualistic world, you know. Then because we have been living for many, many years in this kind of dualistic world, that's why we have no idea non-dualistic world, you know. No, because in India there's an Advaita tradition, that's why we know non-dualistic, you know. No. Non-dualistic is still dualistic. Because why? Because you are thinking of non-dualistic, you know. So that's why you are still living in dualistic world. It's exactly like in Buddhism, you know, there's a like a philosophy of emptiness, you know. It's very sophisticated, very complicated, like that. But philosophy of emptiness is not empty at all, you know. It's full of just a form, full of thinking. So that's why it's not empty, you know. So non-dualistic or Advaita or emptiness, philosophy of empty, this philosophy itself is still dualistic. Why? Because it's a still thought form, you know, like that. Then, so usually we are living in such a structure, subject and object are separated or different, you know. But now Buddha demands us, we have to enter into like a kaya and body and emotion and mind. Then we are forced. We are forced to throw away this kind of dualistic thinking mind. You know, dualistic thinking mind. And then we are going beyond this dualistic world. You know. So that's why Buddha, from the beginning, he demanded us to let go of your dualistic world. Because otherwise, let go of a dualistic thinking mind, you know? Otherwise, unless we let go of our dualistic thinking mind, we can never enter into our body. But Buddha demands us. So that's why now we are letting go of our dualistic thinking mind. Okay? But now we are entering into some kind of new world, you know. Our thinking mind has already dropped, okay. Then, what do you feel? What do you find? Did you become unconscious? Or did you become nothingness, you know? No, you don't become unconscious. You don't become nothing, you know. But isn't it strange? Because we strongly believe thinking mind is me, I am thinking mind. You know, I said many times this in this 3 days, in these 3 days. You know, this is our old identity. But according to old identity, if we let go of our thinking mind, we will become unconscious, we will become nothing. But actually, we didn't become nothing, we didn't become unconscious. It means, what does it mean? You know, it means we are not thinking mind. It's a very simple conclusion. No? So, we are not thinking mind. We are more than that, you know? More than us. Then, everything is so clear. Everything is so clear. Okay? Okay? But this is extremely difficult to understand. Why? Because we have to understand the difference between form and formless. Form and formless. Form. We can recognize form very easily. You know, this world is made of form. You know? Then our thinking mind, our eyes can perceive form. You know? But our thinking mind, our eyes cannot perceive formless. Why? Because it's an ability of our thinking mind. So please understand this point, you know. Our thinking mind can think of only form. So our thinking mind can perceive only the world of form. So that's why when our thinking mind is functioning, the world looks like we can see only the world of form. We can see only the form of our thinking mind, our emotion, and body. You understand? You know? So then we misunderstood. So how did we misunderstand? We misunderstood. We are the form. But of course we couldn't avoid this misunderstanding. Why? For your thinking mind can perceive only form. That's why if you believe you are thinking mind, for you are just a collection of thinking form, emotion form, and body form. Your thinking mind cannot perceive formless world. That's it. That's why for your thinking mind, you can see only the world of form, and you believe you are the form. That's it. Okay? But now, we are completely entering into a very strange world. You know? We are very strange world. First of all, Buddha forced us to let go of a thinking mind by observing body in body. You know, when we are forced to observe our body in body, at that time we are also forced to let go of our thinking mind. Okay? Then now we have no thinking mind, you know. No, we have no thinking mind. We are entering into such kind of world. But we didn't become nothingness, we didn't become empty, we didn't become unconscious. We have a still clear awareness. Oh my goodness, you know. Then, what does it mean? Very clear, you know. It means we are formless, you know. Our essence is formless. But unfortunately, we couldn't see that. Of course we couldn't see, because our thinking mind cannot perceive formless world. But only when we let go of our thinking mind, only when we still didn't become nothingness or unconscious, then we finally understand we are formless. You know, we are formless. This is our essence, you know. Then, in this formless world, something which has form is arising, passing, arising, passing, arising, passing. Okay. So then, everything is so clear, you know. Because many people ask, like our old identity dropped, and new identity appears, and this new identity is now observing things, or this identity is doing vipassana, you know, like I said, I ask question, who is doing vipassana? Who is watching breath, you know? But then I said, this is not our thinking mind, but something else. Then usually people ask, what's something else, you know? please give me the name of something else. Or some like an intellectual human say, oh, yeah, I know, this is direct perception, like that, you know? No. I said, no, please don't say anything, you know. Because why? Please don't give any name. Please don't give any label. Please don't give your concept. Please don't give your category, you know. Because some women said direct perception, you know. But direct perception is just a concept in her mind, you know. So put this concept to this, you know. It's completely meaningless. Why? Because concept or everything is just the world of form, you know? Because now we are entering into the world of formless. So that's why I just say only something else, you know? Because I don't want to give any name to this, you know? But because this formlessness is your essence, you know, then now you can understand the whole structure of your suffering and liberation of your suffering. Why did you suffer? Why did you suffer? Because you misunderstood. How did you misunderstand? You misunderstood you are the form. You know? And what is the form? Form is very fragile. Very fragile. You know? Very vulnerable. You know? So as long as you think you are the form, then you cannot avoid suffering. Do you understand? Because if you are the form, this form is so fragile, you know? That's why you always feel anxiety and fear. And you always feel you have to get more and you have to escape from something wrong or like that, you know. Then always this world is world of suffering. We can't avoid it. So point is, Buddha said this world is world of suffering or life is suffering. What does it mean? You know, I said, you know, all the world is something like that. But if we speak more precisely, if you think you are the form, no? F-O-R-M, you know, form, then you cannot avoid suffering. This is the meaning of life is suffering. Okay? Then now you understand the fundamental cause of your suffering. So what is the fundamental cause of your suffering? Your misunderstanding. Your misunderstanding about who you are. You know? You misunderstood you are the form. Form is you. You are the, like, consist of thinking form, emotion form, and body form. know, this is a you. You thought like that. Then you cannot avoid suffering. So that's why fundamental cause of suffering is your misunderstanding. Okay? Then, now we enter into the body, emotion, mind, and our thinking mind has dropped, and we didn't become nothing, we didn't become unconscious, you know, we still we. Then what we are realizing? What are we realizing? We are realizing we are formless. You know? So at that time, we are already free from our suffering. Why? Because our suffering exists only the world of form. Okay? So, then you can understand the relationship between old identity and new identity. Old identity is an identity with form. New identity is an identity identified with a formless. But because it's a formless, you cannot be identified anything. You know. So that's why, like, until now, we couldn't understand this one. Because for our thinking mind, we cannot perceive formless world. But now we understand our essence is formless. And it's better not label. better not put any kind of label to this formless, you know. But the people, but very soon people talk about this formless, formlessness with many kind of concept or like that, you know. Then you can understand, of course, emptiness, you know, like that. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Of course, so easy to understand. You know? From your thinking mind, you can see only the world of form. But if you let go of your thinking mind, you yourself is formless. And in this formless world, form is arising, passing away. That's why they say form is form is emptiness, emptiness is form. So then, now, okay, we have to conclude, you know, okay? So that's why, if we realize who we are, now you know the answer. We are the formless as essence, you know? But it's not just a formless, you know, formless, you know? In this formless, of course, form is arising, passing away. And then, Zen tradition, or Tibetan tradition, they love the metaphor of blue sky and white clouds. You know? Our essence is blue sky. Then, in this blue sky, white clouds, they are just arising, passing, coming and going, you know? So, if we use, but for your thinking mind, you can see only white clouds. Why? Because white clouds has a form. Blue sky doesn't have a form. That's why for your thinking mind, you cannot see blue sky itself. You know? That's why it's a little bit confusing, you know? Okay? Then, as long as you think you are identified white clouds, your life is full of suffering. But now, you can stop being identified with white clouds. Because white clouds is not your essence. yes, you have still white clouds, and inside you, white clouds are appearing and disappearing, but you are not white clouds. You are blue sky. Now you understand this one. Then your attitude toward white clouds will be totally different. For you, each white cloud used to be very serious, you know, very serious issue. One thought appears in you. Then you, for this thought is very important. One opinion is very important because this opinion is you. You are the opinion. So that's why you cannot tolerate anybody who doesn't have the same opinion. And of course, you don't mind killing anybody who have different opinions. You know? So that's why we have been fighting, like that. But now, white cloud is not at all important for you, because you know that you are the blue sky. Okay? Okay, so anyway, we have to conclude, you know. Like this, you know. So, you know, so if you can practice, if you continue to practice like this, means you are the, as your essence is a blue sky, you know, then as a blue sky, now you are observing white clouds. What kind of white clouds? Body sensation or in-breath, out-breath, like that. You know? Then at that time, there's no dualistic subject and object. Just only in-breath, out-breath appears. Just only body sensation appears. There is no observer. You know? There is no observer. Only something observed. Like that. So at that time, already, your defilement are purified. Of course, you know, defilement, we have a defilement only because we think we are the form. That's why anger and attachment we couldn't avoid. But now we know we are not form. That's why we can avoid anger and attachment. Okay? So, anyway, if you can practice this kind of body sensation, observing body sensation, and observing in-breath, out-breath, and developing compassion, you know, then point is, still formlessness is a still concept for you, you know. So that's why it's not really, it's not real. It's not real, like a reality which we can live, which we can touch, you know. So that's why I really hope you can really touch this formless world, you know, by letting go of your thinking mind. Then if you touch it, that's it. You have already arrived. You have already arrived. You don't have to wait for next life. You know? You don't have to wait for 30 years, you know. You have already arrived right now. You know? Then after that, your job is, because you have a very strong habitual tendency. What kind of habitual tendency? Everything, you are completely identified with their form, you know. Then always saying no, you know. That's why this kind of habitual tendency, you know. So please throw away this habitual tendency, and then little by little getting a new identity or live as a new identity. But soon you are going back to your old identity, but you will suffer. You know that. So if you suffer, then it means you are living as an old identity. Then come back to new identity, you know. So maybe just back and forth for a while, you know. But little by little, your new identity will be more majority, you know. Okay, anyway, okay, we have to conclude. I have to conclude my talk, you know. So, after break, you know, we'll have a simple yoga session, and today we'll have an Anapanasati practice, you know. Okay, okay. If you have a question, please ask later.